I have so many things to say to you, but before I start, I really didn't mean what I said then, about the crash, and the important part being what might have happened to me. I truly don't believe that, and please don't think it. I just wanted to give him the worst time I could. Dazel couldn't argue with that. The magistrate's face had collapsed in on itself with horror, and young Master Acaster was probably getting a pepper at this moment. How are you there? How are you here? Why is Martin here? I came to find you and met him on the road, Cassian said. He said you were going to be prosecuted for hitting that fool, so we came up with a plan. For Martin to object and you to come in if that didn't work, why? The answer was all too obvious, but it still hurt enormously, churning miserably in his gut. Were you trying not to lose your wager? Oh, good God, no, Cassian said urgently. Not at all. I wanted him to intervene because I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to sweep in as the Duke of Severn come to rescue you. I hoped that he could make the magistrate realize that his corruption wasn't going unobserved and get you out of trouble. I didn't want you to owe your deliverance to me when it was all my fault you were in that position in the first place. No, it wasn't. I hit that idiot. You were on that coach in the first place because of me. Because of my wager and my foolishness and my lies, and I'm so sorry, Dazel. I hurt you horribly and I will regret it for the rest of my life. You have every right to be furious, and I know an apology means very little when I chose to act as I did, and you don't have to listen if you don't want to. But I'd like to explain myself if you'd hear me out. They were standing in the parlour watching one another. Dazel's pulse was thumping in an unpleasant, thready way. He moved to lean on the mantelpiece. You did hurt me. A lot. For a bet. It wasn't, Cassian said urgently. That was how I got into the situation, but it isn't the reason I lied. Please, could I... Are you all right? Fine. No, you're not. You're awfully pale. Have you eaten? Not for a while, Dazel said. The accommodations in jail weren't very generous. Sit, Cassian said urgently. And oh, Lord, you want a wash, don't you? Not to listen to me chatter. And your coat, oh, Daze, this is all my fault. Will you let me put this right for now? And if you want to hear me once you've had a chance to recover yourself, we'll talk later. And if you don't, we won't. But let me do something because you look shocking. Please. Dazel was painfully hungry, quite thirsty, unpleasantly aware of his dirt, and entirely exhausted after the battering of the last days. A prouder man might have refused anything from Cassian, even so. Dazel was fresh out of pride, and he had empty pockets and nothing to his name. So he nodded, and Cassian strode out into the hall, calling for attention. He'd learned. Or was he using his title? Dazel wasn't sure and didn't have the energy to care. He was conducted to a comfortable room and brought lavish quantities of food and ale, which he ate in a borrowed gown because his clothes, retrieved by Martin, had been taken for washing, and his spare linen had been stolen in jail. He ate alone while a hot bath was prepared, of which he made good use, scrubbing away the visible evidence of humiliation and misery. And then he slept because he couldn't keep his eyes open any longer. He woke for long enough to devour another good meal, and slept again, and woke the next morning feeling at least physically back to something like normal. That meant he was restive. In fact, he was on tenterhooks, because he was going to have to speak to Cassian, and he didn't want to. He didn't want to hear apologies or explanations. He absolutely didn't want declarations. He didn't want any of it unless it came with something he was determined not to hope for, because hope was no longer something he could afford to indulge. The cost was too high. He would have liked to take up his bag and leave, slip away quietly, but he couldn't because he had nothing to wear. This was absurd. He ate the large breakfast provided, in a dressing gown, in a bad mood, and then sat by the window, cutting very unkind profiles of Sir Benjamin Acaster for want of anything else to do, when there was a knock and Cassian came in. He offered Dazel a small, uncertain smile. Good morning. You look a little better. I feel better for the sleep and the food. Thank you for those. I assume you're paying. I can't. I'd apologize for my undress, but my clothes have been removed. Your things will be ready by the afternoon, Cassian said. Please command whatever you want in the way of food or drink or anything else. And I owe you £50. I know you didn't take it before, but I owe it to you, and I'd like you to have it now, before anything else. What anything else? Cassian's shoulders sagged a fraction. I was hoping you'd talk to me and let me talk to you. It's up to you, but I wish you would. But please take the money first, because I owe it to you and you earned it. You found my ring and nobody else could have done that. Daisel took the note he held up because he'd be a fool not to. This would at least replenish his wardrobe. And if he was sensible, it would see him through the year. He intended to be sensible. It was about time. Thank you, he said again, trying to sound a bit less grudging. I don't want to go over everything. I can't see the point. But you didn't have to come back or rescue me, and certainly not identify yourself to do it. The Duke of Severn intervening to rescue a jailbird Charnage. He wouldn't want that story to spread. So if you want to call it quits here, we could part friends. It sounded more hopeful than he'd meant. He hadn't quite realized until he spoke that he did want to be friends, or at least to believe in Cassian's friendship. Cassian stood still, his eyes fixed on Daisel's face. He swallowed before he spoke. Is that what you want? To part? We have parted, but it wasn't how I'd have wanted to end things, and if you want to put matters on a more amicable footing, that's not what I want at all. Cassian had gone rather pale. I don't want to end things. I didn't come back to say goodbye, if that's really what you want, though. If you don't care to hear me out because you're not interested, then... How can you not have come back to say goodbye? Daisel demanded over him. What else is there to say? You're Severn. I appreciate what you've just done for me, I truly do. But if what you're going to say boils down to I'm a duke and I have to go back to my palace, I'd rather we just agreed you have to and didn't go over it all. What's the point? I am a duke and I do have to. The point is, I don't want to. Daisel didn't think Cassian was a man for scenes, but his rain-swept eyes were wild. This was going to be awful. What is it you want to say that will change anything? He demanded. You're talking about apologizing, but what you need to apologize for is that you were always out of my reach, and you knew that and I didn't. And however much you apologize for that, you'll still be out of my reach, and I don't need to have that hammered home. His throat ached. You lied to me, and now I'm left loving a man who is never real. And there's no point in you explaining why you did that to me. It won't make things better. Oh, God. Daisel, did you mean that? Cassian took two steps forward and dropped to a knee, grabbing Daisel's hand. You still love me? We are not going to do this, Daisel almost shouted. Do you have any idea what it feels like? He'd had perfection for a handful of days and briefly believed he could keep it. And he didn't need to be told this mess was bad for Cassian, too. You were always on a lark, I understand that. You don't need to rub it in. No, listen. Cassian's eyes were fixed on his. Actually listen, Daisel, because you have entirely the wrong idea. I'm begging you to hear me, please. He didn't want to listen. He wanted to run away to find a blanket and shove his head under it and not have to plow through a conversation that at best would only make him feel worse about what he'd lost. But he couldn't leave the room in a borrowed gown, and the Duke of Severn was kneeling by him with what looked like real pain in his eyes. All right, he said, with less grace than he'd have liked. Go on. Chapter 16. For someone who had begged for a hearing, Cassian didn't start talking at once. Daisel didn't hurry him, he didn't want to listen. He felt miserable and harried and haunted, and Cassian had put all those feelings there. Maybe he had something to say that would take them away. Maybe not. Daisel pulled his hand free because he didn't need to be touching. Cassian took that hint, rising and pulling over the other chair so they faced each other across the table with its cut paper and scissors. Cassian took a deep breath, visibly steeling himself. All right. First, the bet. I made it with my cousin Leo as an excuse to get away without attendance and find my ring. I told you all that. What I didn't say is that I wanted, needed, to stop being Seven for a while. That's why I made the assignation with Martin in the first place. I needed just for a little while not to be a duke. What's wrong with being a duke? I wouldn't know, Cassian said. I don't know about being anything else. My father died when I was 6. Before that, I was Harmsford, the courtesy title, and when he died, I became Seven. I haven't been called by my first name in my life. Not that I like my name, but I have been Seven, and only Seven almost since I can remember. The only people who ever played with me as a normal child were my cousins. The whole world puts me at a distance because of my position. I have friends, of course, but as Seven. My uncle has spent 2 decades grooming me to be Seven. Him and my valet and everyone around me always saying, Seven must do this and that. Seven is obliged. Seven may not lower himself. Seven, Seven, Seven. That's my whole purpose in life. To fill a Seven-shaped hole. I don't suppose I do it well, but nobody asked me if I wanted to do it at all. And it is a very luxurious, privileged hole, far better than the holes most people find themselves in. Nobody asked you if you wanted to be George Charnage's son any more than they asked me to be Seven's, and clearly I had the preferable lot in life. But it's stifling, all the same. He looked up then, as if expecting an interruption. Daisel didn't have anything to offer. Dukedom wasn't a problem he'd ever considered, and he was fairly sure he'd prefer it to his own troubles. But Cassian was speaking with unusual urgency, venting something he'd been holding on to for a while. So he wanted to get away, Daisel tried. Cabined, cribbed, confined. I needed to be not Seven just for a little while. That was when Martin approached me, and he didn't know who I was. He wasn't carefully respecting me. I had, or thought I had, one evening where I was being judged on my own merits and found satisfactory. Well, that went poorly. I felt useless, worse than useless. Held up by the scaffolding of my privilege, Leo said, and he was right, and I thought, if I don't find a way to carve a space for myself. Seven is going to close in around me until all that's left is the scaffolding. All outside and no inside. I don't know if I'm explaining this very well, but I wanted to be someone who wasn't Seven so very much, just for a little while, to see. And then I met you, and I was. Oh, goodness days. He rubbed a hand over his face. You didn't treat me as the Duke, or carefully not treat me as the Duke, which is worse. I was Cassian with you for the first time in my life. Nobody's ever called me that before. I never dared ask anyone to. What, why not? Because... Cassian's mouth moved, then he picked up the paper on the table. Daisel had cut the caricature in one piece without any further snipping, so the surrounding excess paper might have formed a hollow cut except for the one long snip for access. Cassian put that sheet down so the wood of the table formed the magistrate's profile. Look, this is Seven, or at least something that makes a Seven shape. And this is Cassian. He put down the inside cut, a solid image, next to the other piece. One is the opposite of the other, and I don't know how to be both at once. I've always tried to be Seven as well as I could, but that didn't allow any space for Cassian because, well, I've seen you make a hollow cut. When you do it properly, you start by destroying the inside part of the paper, don't you? You pierce a hole in the inside and cut it all away, bit by bit, to make the perfect, unsullied outside shape. Cass, only you don't have to. Cassian sounded urgent, almost feverish. You showed me that. I want to be... He gestured at the hollow cut on the table with its surrounding paper cut just once, otherwise intact. It isn't quite perfect. It's a little bit damaged, but it's almost right. There's an outside and an inside, and they both work, and that's what you gave me. When you saw me and listened to me and expected me to do a good job of things, you didn't have any Seven shape at all. You just saw Cassian. And I didn't want to change that. I couldn't bear to lose it, and if I told you, I would have. And, as you pointed out, all I was thinking about there was myself. It was selfish and deceptive and unfair to you, I know that, but I liked who I was with you. Who you were and who I was and what we had together. I liked it so much, and every day we had together helped make Cassian into a real person. You are a real person. Cassian wasn't. He didn't even have a name. Cassian swallowed. And then I was, and I could be, because of you. And if I told you the truth, that would have ruined it. He tried a smile. My uncle likes to say if the truth shames you, the fault lies with you, not with the truth. Daisel wasn't so sure of that. There were lots of things one could be ashamed of that weren't one's fault. You can't help being a duke. But my silence was for my benefit at your expense. And that was dreadful of me for all sorts of reasons, cowardly and dishonest, but also ungrateful. Because you're wonderful, Daisel. His rain-swept eyes were wide and intent. I don't think you know how wonderful you are. How much you care, how kind you are, how ridiculously tolerant and loving and practical and ingenious and accepting. That most of all. I've never in my life been myself as I have been with you. And you didn't do all that because I'm seven. You did it because you're Daisel. So wonderfully, perfectly Daisel. And I wished I could just travel with you forever and keep you company and see if I could make you as happy as you make me. But you couldn't, Daisel said, voice thick, because you were seven and you always had to go home. Yes, Cassian said, and also no, because you found out and I went to see my cousins and they were saying things about what seven could do and who he could associate with as usual, and I realized that I can't have two separate lives. Daisel set his jaw. Is that not what I said at the beginning? No, because the point is, I need to be... He moved the inside cut, dropping it into the empty outline, filling the gap. Not seven with Cassian as a guilty secret, and not Cassian playing a game of pretend that he isn't seven. Cassian must be seven, but seven has to be Cassian as well, for purpose of humanity and living. I realize I'm talking about myself in the third person as though I'm Julius Caesar, but you see... I want a whole life. I want you in it as my friend, my lover, my Daisel. As yourself. Because I could be myself with you, and I thought, you could be happy with me, and I want you to be happy more than I can say. I know I didn't behave that way. You did, Daisel said, except at the end you did. I want to be happy with you, Cassian whispered. Or sad with you, or angry with you, but with you. He swallowed. If that's what you want, of course. If you don't, or not anymore, I do understand. My position is going to make everything very tiresome, and I conducted myself appallingly, and I'm not terribly special other than being a duke. I know all of that. But I've spent the last 3 weeks falling quite desperately in love with you. And even if I have already ruined everything, I need you to know that I love you. I wish I hadn't hurt you, and when I did, it was never, never for something as foolish as a bet. I was hollow. And you let me be there. I want to be with you. So the only question is if you'd like to be with me. It's not the only question. I wish it was that easy. Do you really? Oh, God, Daisel, please tell me I haven't spoiled everything, and I swear I'll make this easy, or at least possible. It has to be possible. Cassian slid to his knees again by the chair, urgently grasping Daisel's hands. You're so generous and ridiculous and wonderful, and... My good, my very good days. He bowed his head over their joined hands. I hurt you and I missed you and I love you. Cass. Daisel whispered it. Cassian's hands tightened on his. I missed you too. I wanted there to be something for us. There can be, there has to be. But what? I have to know, I need to. It's been so lonely and so pointless and I thought I had something with you. Days. I can't be thrown away again. I don't know why people find it so easy to throw me away. He blurted that out, feeling the horrible childishness of it. The bewildered realization that his mother cared only for his father, and his father for nobody at all. My parents and everyone I thought was my friend, and Martin, and then you. No, let me finish. I can't keep only mattering when other people care because they always stop caring. I can't be disposable all my life. I don't want you to be. But if I can't see you or be seen with you or visit you, what do you have in mind? That I should sit somewhere rural and wait for you to call when you're not busy with your dukedom? I'm not asking that at all. I want you with me and I want you to have your life back. Surely we can manage that between us. I'm a duke and you're brilliant. No, I'm not. I lurch from crisis to crisis and I end up in jail. What sort of companion is that for a duke?
One that changed me, Cassian said.
And you're entirely wrong. You tracked Martin down and got my ring back. You saved a child's life. You taught me how to negotiate the world and kept me safe when I was a hopeless greenhorn and came to save me when I was kidnapped. I got you kidnapped. You rescued yourself. You stole a horse to come to my rescue, Cassian said indignantly, and then his mouth twitched. Which perhaps was not entirely sensible, but I wouldn't have even thought to do something about being kidnapped before I met you. I only had a knife with me because I was copying you and the way you deal with the situation in front of you. Not in that awful efficient way of bear leaders. I had the most tiresome man on my grand tour, always sweeping in to make everything easy for me, and demonstrating how wonderfully competent he was all the time, which meant I never did a thing. You're not like that. No, I'm really not. Good, Cassian said vehemently. I don't want another person to run my life for me. I'm fighting off dozens of them as it is. I want to do things for myself, and I want to be myself, all of me, and I want you with me, because if I tried to do it alone, the castle walls would come pushing in again, and the duty and the ceremony and my space to be Cassian would get smaller and smaller until I was squeezed to death. I need you to be the person who keeps the space clear and who doesn't let me hide away from the world or disappear under a pile of ermine. When I was with you, I told stories in an inn, and people laughed. I knew you loved that, Daisel said, his heart aching like a bruise. You showed me how. You looked so pleased with me, for me. I need you, Daisel. I dare say I could manage on my own. Perhaps I could still be Cassian without you, but I don't want to.
Daisel made a noise in his throat.
Cassian let go his hands, grabbed his shoulders and kissed him. And Daisel sank into the kiss, feeling tears running down his face, not caring. He'd come back. He wanted more. They surely couldn't have more, but he still wanted it, wanted Daisel. And that knowledge was everything. That knowledge plus Cassian in his arms again, the grip of his fingers, the urgency of his kiss.
They didn't speak as they stripped one another, Cassian pulling the gown off Daisel's shoulders, Daisel wrenching off Cassian's sadly battered cravat.
There wasn't much to say, unless there was far too much, and the silence was soothing. Lips and fingers and skin could do the speaking for now.
Daisel pulled Cassian to the bed, laid him down and lay with him, relishing the closeness as much as anything. He could simply have stayed there and held him, but Cassian's hands were roaming frantically, urgently, as though he needed to persuade himself Daisel was really there, and his need was contagious.
Daisel hauled him round so he lay on his back with Cassian over him, and Cassian crawled down his body, kissing his way as he went, and got his mouth to Daisel's prick.
Oh God, Daisel said aloud on a breath. Cass, please.
Cassian had a clever mouth, he knew. They'd done this a couple of times, but he was giving it everything he had now, using lips and tongue and teeth and the roof of his mouth. Sucking hard and soft, changing the pace as though he was trying to drive Daisel out of what passed for his mind, and by God it was working. The Duke of Severn giving him a gamma-hutching of a lifetime. He'd got his fingers in Cassian's hair at some point, grabbing a handful, and Cassian's hands were hard on his hips because he was only using his mouth, keeping this going for an agonizingly long time that passed far too fast. Daisel moaned and bucked under him and spent in his mouth with sobs of pleasure that could all too easily have been the other kind. Cassian stayed where he was, crouching over him for a moment, then made his way back up the bed to pillow his head on Daisel's chest.
Really, you ought not to be a duke, Daisel said at last. You should do that professionally.
I try to please.
Cassian's head was heavy on him.
I'm not assuming I've been forgiven, by the way. You don't have to make anything up to me. I don't know if I understand what it's like to be you, but I heard what you said. I don't suppose there was ever a good moment to say, by the way, I'm a duke. And I don't blame you if you weren't able to trust me in your position.
I did. I do. It wasn't that.
Well, it should have been.
You need to be more careful. What were you thinking, making assignations with someone like Martin?
If he'd known who you were,
you think he'd have blackmailed me?
Not him, but someone like him might have tried it, and then where would you be?
I know.
Cassian's head felt a little heavier on his chest as he said it.
That's why...
What?
I never... Before, I've only ever had... paid companions, you know. An extremely discreet, very expensive brothel. It was better than nothing, of course. Probably. Actually, it was awful. Not the people, they were very pleasant. But I went 4 times, and every time I felt wretched afterwards. But it was all that was available, because at least that way one could guarantee discretion.
Dazel squinted down at the top of his head.
You couldn't just fucking, well, not an equal, but at least an earl or some such?
Cassian gave a laugh without mirth.
The opportunity has never arisen. For one thing, I'm 7, and for another, I'm me.
Rubbish, don't say that. It's not false modesty, I know I'm not much to look at. I can't complain, given everything else I was born with.
You're everything to look at.
The problem is that people don't look,
Dazel said.
They don't see. Anyone who actually looked at you would see you're beautiful, and if they let your dukedom get in the way of that, they're a fool.
Cassian raised his head at that, and the look in his yellow-grey eyes, the shape of his lovely, wistful mouth.
Dazel pulled him up and kissed him hard, and Cassian wrapped himself around him, clinging on.
Dazel kissed his hair, his ear, anything that he could reach, and Cassian kissed his neck, open-mouthed, hungry and urgent.
Days, Lord, my good, my lovely days.
Dazel knew that tone by now.
Talk to me, he whispered, please.
And Cassian did, so gentle, so loving, whispering endearments, taking it long and slow so that Dazel spent again, soothed and shivering and cherished, in his tight embrace.
Chapter 17. They lay in silence for a little while after that. Cassian was exhausted by all the talking, and Dazel looked much the same. But the desperate, sick misery had gone from his eyes. Even if they couldn't make this work, and they would, he was determined they would, Cassian would always be thankful he'd been able to repair some of the damage he'd done.
Thank you for giving me a chance, he said aloud.
I'm glad you came back. So am I. And that I found you, and was there in time.
That part was particularly good, Dazel said.
Not to say spectacular.
Oh, don't.
Cassian buried his face in Dazel's glinting chest hair.
Dramatic entries are not my forte.
They truly are. It was a marvellous sight. Stalking up and giving that magistrate the fish eye.
I think you mean to say asserting the natural authority of my position.
Swinging your duke around. Cassian gave a yelp of startled laughter. Dazel grinned down at him, and Cassian smiled back, feeling a ridiculous bubble of joy expanding in his chest.
I may say it is a great deal easier chasing people across the country in my own vehicle. I am proud that I have acquired experience of the stage, but I'm never taking it again as long as I live.
Dazel blinked. Wait, your own? Does that mean you've lost your bet?
It doesn't matter, I had to find you and I didn't want to lose time.
What was the stake, or...
No.
No?
Dazel made a face.
If it was a guinea or some such, I don't think I want to know.
Cassian grabbed his hand.
It was truly never about the bet.
But since you ask, it was my greys. That is, I have a matched pair of...
Dazel sat up, jolting Cassian's head off his chest.
Your greys? You don't mean the Duke of Severn's greys?
My greys, yes.
Leah wanted it to be a stake that counted, which it did, he added with a grimace.
I trained them myself, and they are a wonderful pair.
But you've lost them.
Rather them than you, Cassian said. If I had delayed and you had been convicted and jailed or whipped while I dallied,
no.
If letting Leo have my greys is the price of finding you, then I count it cheap.
But I don't want him to give them to Vere.
Sir James, why would he do that?
He lost a great deal of money to Vere at cards.
He thinks, no doubt correctly, that the horrible man will take my greys in settlement. He covets them.
I will not let him have them while there is breath in my body, so I shall have to...
Oh, I don't know what I can do.
Leo won't take my money.
Really?
My uncle always bent over backwards to avoid exploiting his position as my guardian, he sighed.
It was a difficult path to tread and hard for my cousins, too, growing up in luxury that wasn't theirs, with their shrimp of a cousin as the special one. Other people might have been resentful about it or greedy. Leo is, oh, punctilious. He absolutely will not take my money. And if that ends up being painful for me, as now, well, I can understand why he might feel justified in a little jab here and there. But if my Greys suffer for it, that would be my fault, and I can't have that. Could you not explain that to him? Leo isn't sentimental about horses. He thinks they're just animals. And he does owe Veer a great deal of money, so he's in rather a bad position. Although, given Veer probably cheated to win it. What? Daisel yelped. Oh, goodness, I haven't told you. I had a time of it in your absence. He outlined the meeting with Miss Beaumont and the revelation of Veer's system of cheating, through which Daisel choked and spluttered with outrage. I left them at Louisa's house, Cassian concluded. Lord knows what's happened since. But never mind Leo or Miss Beaumont either. What are we to do about us? Daisel flopped back on the bed. I want to say it's up to you. You're the one with responsibilities and power and money. No, that won't work. You can't feel as though it's my life and you're an addendum to it, still less that I have all the power. I don't want all the power. If I wanted someone who would do exactly and only what I choose in a way that suited me, I could have paid for that. You could, Daisel said. You could have paid someone to give you a rude awakening at any time, come to that. Why didn't you?
Because. Cassian had to stop and think through it. Because that wasn't an act I wanted performed for the sake of it, not really. It mattered because of how you did it. Because I could trust you with it, telling you a secret truth, believing you would not abuse it. Because you wanted to do it for me. Because it was you.
Daisel stared up at the ceiling, silent, for a long moment.
And what about marriage?
Cassian had heard that men conducted their own ceremonies, sometimes in a spirit of misrule and sometimes in one of seriousness. He wasn't sure about that.
It's not legal, but if you want that.
What, I meant you, you fool, you're a duke, you need heirs. Haven't you an arrangement lined up?
I have heirs.
This at least was solid ground for Cassian. My uncle Hugo and his two sons would all do as well as I, and there will be no arrangement. I have never in my life inclined to women, and I may be obliged to distort my own life to fit round the edges of seven. But I'm cursed if I inflict that on someone who has a right to expect better. I will not make vows of love and fidelity to another person and before God when I have neither the ability nor the intention to keep them.
People will expect it.
Then I will disappoint them, Cassian said rather crisply. The men of my family tend not to marry early anyway, and my father inherited from his own uncle. It's hardly unusual. I will happily put off all inquiries as too early till I'm 40, and then move seamlessly into being a confirmed bachelor. I would rather be disappointing to matchmakers than an unfaithful husband to a wife and an unfaithful lover to you. Daisel's lips parted. Cassian rethought what he'd said.
That made a number of assumptions.
It did a little. I really am not asking you to sit in a cottage or a London house waiting for me to call. You already said you wouldn't want that. I don't want it either. Which brings us back to what you do want, how this might work.
It works when we can be together, Cassian said. I don't know exactly what that looks like, but I know it requires you to have your reputation back.
Daisel lay there unblinking, then rolled over and propped himself on an elbow. His bronze and copper chest hair was unbearably delicious. Cassian stopped himself from burying his face in it, or at least postponed that thought.
Say that again. You need to return to society. You should not be cast out because of what your father did. And everything else is Veer's spite, and I don't see why his opinion of you should count for more than mine.
Not quite everything, Daisel said. I don't have any money.
No, but I do. I have money and I have power and place. And I have sat on my own for years with my money and power and place between me and everybody else. Is there any way we could not let it stand between us?
Because if the obstacle to us being together is that you don't have money and the solution is right here in my hands,
it's not the sole obstacle, but it's a big one. Forget where the money comes from. If you had a decent wardrobe, say, and no need to cut profiles except for entertainment, and the Duke of Severn is your friend, do you not think you might be able to return to society?
Another long silence.
Maybe, Daisel said at last.
Possibly.
Although with Veer continually spitting venom, I don't want to be feeble. But it hurts when people make digs or turn away or sneer. I decided I wouldn't play again because, well, the obvious. But also because I don't think I could sit at a gaming table and wait for someone to make a joke.
No, I see. I don't mean to be difficult. If you think we can do this, I mean to say I've the Duke of Severn begging me to be with him.
An actual duke. Good Lord, you're a duke, he added with something like his usual energy. You should do something ducal. I have robes somewhere, and a coronet, a ridiculous crimson velvet arrangement with fur trim, if that helps. Try it on for me sometime. Let me sort this out in my head. I would love not to ever think about money again in my life, and I quite see you could solve that problem for me. But I don't want to be an appendage or an addendum or whatever the word is. I want to be useful, needful. Tell me the truth, Cass. Can I make your life better?
Cassian grabbed his hand.
You already have. If you left me today, you would have still made my life better, and I will always remember that. But please don't leave, because I want you to keep on doing it.
You make my life so much better, and I say that as one of the most privileged men in England.
I want you with me because you are necessary to me.
I don't want to be an addendum, Daisel said again. But if I can play a useful role in Severn's household, even if that role is keeping Cassian happy,
it's a great deal more than that,
Cassian said, the joy sparkling through his veins.
You got my ring back. You have ideas. I need you as a confidential facilitator of all sorts of things, including but not limited to my happiness.
Daisel gripped his hand, tangling their fingers together. I mean it. I want to be valuable, Cass.
I will lean on you so heavily you will stagger under the weight, Cassian promised. His heart was thudding with the possibilities, seeing Daisel happy, content.
There. Do you suppose you could think of a way to keep my greys, or at least prevent them going to Veer? Because I have lost the bet, and I have also upset Leo quite badly. And I must say I feel apprehensive. And then there are Miss Beaumont's affairs, which I have rather made my responsibility, and your rehabilitation in the eyes of society, and talking of Veer, I have several scores to settle there. So if you have any ideas on all that...
Daisel grinned at him.
I'll give it my best shot.
Daisel's clothes were delivered an hour or so later. Cassian had paid quite a lot of money to expedite what he wanted, in case Daisel had been determined to leave. He might also have gone a little overboard in his guilt and remorse.
Daisel stared blankly at the delivery.
What the?
Your coat was ruined and your linen was stolen at the jail. I had to replace it and...
Your shoes were in an awful way too, and it was my fault, so...
He gave an embarrassed smile.
I got carried away. 2 coats, 3 pairs of breeches, 2 waistcoats, 5 shirts. Cassian, this is a wardrobe.
It was the bare bones of one in Cassian's view, though admittedly rather more than Daisel had originally possessed. Cassian had sent the remaining sorry garments to the best tailor in the vicinity and demanded clothing made to the same size, overnight, for suitable recompense. He'd need to visit a bank again.
Try them on, he said. If anything doesn't fit or is missing, Martin can get it dealt with.
Martin?
He's staying here. I should pay for his stay and reassure him of your well-being. And I thought you might want to speak to him.
And you said he was a valet, so I asked him to help me. He was usually attended by tailors when he needed a new coat. Linen and other necessaries simply appeared. He would, he thought, have been very capable of tackling the tailor himself, and rather regretted not doing so. But with Daisel in urgent need, it seemed more sensible to call on an expert.
Daisel was gaping at him. Cassian shrugged awkwardly. He was determined to help you, and you said he wasn't that bad, and honestly, if it hadn't been for him, I shouldn't have met you.
I thought I might forgive and forget.
You are a remarkable duke,
Daisel said, and kissed him. The tailor had done a good job. Dazel's two new coats, one in a similar green to his old one, one in rich blue, fit very well. It all did, in fact, down to the shoes. Dazel stood in new, clean, unworn finery, staring at himself in the spotty mirror. He looked like a gentleman of very certain fortune.
"That makes a difference," he said at last. "Thank you. You look marvellous, better than me, in fact. I didn't like to say."
Cassian stuck out his tongue. "I've sent for my own clothes to be delivered to Louisa's house. I ought to go there, and I wondered if you'd come. I think we need to put our heads together about Vere and Miss Beaumont. And to be honest, I ought to apologize for shouting at Leo, but also, well, perhaps this is a place to start bringing you back to the world. You know Leo, don't you? And he's popular."
"I know him," Dazel said. "He ceased to know me after my father's incident."
"Oh." Cassian hadn't quite put that together. "Oh, I'm sorry. Would you rather not meet him?"
"No, I might as well. See how it goes, I suppose, and I'll have to get used to it. And he wasn't unkind. I can't blame anyone for being revolted."
"Do you want to go tonight?"
"No," Cassian said, "not tonight. I'd rather... could we go for a walk? A walk and eat together and have the rest of the day just for us before we move on to everything else."
Dazel walked over and rested his head against Cassian's, forehead to forehead.
"Let's do that."
Cassian had to admit he was nervous as they drove back to Lemington Spa. He had hired a good pair of horses and drove at a clipping pace. Dazel sat beside him on the box. It was infinitely better than the stage. It was also far superior to plodding along in the ducal coach with outriders, a valet, and all the trappings of attendance. He did want his valet since he was tired of being a scruffy mess and of packing clothes and organizing laundry. So tired, in fact, that Dazel had got Martin to deal with it all in return for a lift to Lemington Spa. Still, the freedom of movement of the last month was something he wanted to experience again. They arrived at Lemington in the early evening, tired and windswept. Cassian took a room, two beds, at the Star, and sent a note to warn Louisa while they made themselves presentable. And they made their way over to the Kentridges' home. They were shown into the drawing room, where Kentridge, Louisa, Leo, and Miss Beaumont were waiting.
"Sev," Louisa rose, "and Mr. Charnage."
Cassian made introductions between Dazel and the Kentridges. Miss Beaumont greeted him enthusiastically.
"Oh, Mr. Charnage, I am so pleased to see you again. I have told Mr. Cross and Louisa all about how kind and clever you were. I hope you're well."
"Excellently, thank you,"
Dazel said, saluting her hand. He straightened to look at Leo, who was glowering.
"Cross?
Charnage?"
Leo returned.
"It's been some time. I understand you've been getting my cousin in trouble.
Actually, it was the other way around."
Dazel said it easily enough, but Cassian could feel his tension and Leo's bristle as he returned.
"The Duke of Severn isn't known for making trouble."
"You suggested yourself that it would do me good to do so," Cassian put in.
"I didn't know how much trouble you had in mind, or that you intended to take your responsibilities so carelessly."
"Leo, for heaven's sake,
you made the point that you are Severn, Your Grace. You are obliged to live up to your title."
"You overstate matters, Leo," Kentridge said in his mild way. "People tolerate a great deal more and worse from all corners of the House of Lords than anything Severn has done. I might even suggest that Lord Hugo's very natural desire to fulfil his obligations in loco parentis, and Severn's exceedingly tolerant nature, have led to rather an oppressive set of expectations around his conduct, which, so far, has been faultless to a fault."
"Kentridge," Louisa said, "if you're going to talk like that, stand for Parliament."
He smiled at his wife.
"That is, I don't think it's good for anyone to be obliged to be perfect. It's not in human nature. I cannot see that Severn has done anything mean or unkind. So perhaps we could end this argument, which smacks of moralizing."
"I'm not moralizing," Leo protested furiously. "If I do not approve of Severn's associations, it is because Charnage's disgraceful behavior has caused the greatest harm to the reputation of a lady
whom I admire and respect above all others. Now wait a moment, Cassian snapped.
Louisa said,
Leo, for goodness sake. And Miss Beaumont put in, louder than anyone, Mr. Cross, that is unfair.
It is on Miss Beaumont's own telling. Most unfair,
Kentridge said. He was a remarkably self-possessed man, and rather more authoritative than any of those present. He also had a knack of saying things in a manner that made the Cross family listen, which Cassian intended to learn.
And it is also discourteous to a guest in my house.
Leo reddened.
That is all very well, but look at the situation Miss Beaumont is in. You have achieved very little with her trustees, and all Vere needs to do is spread this story of a second elopement to ruin her entirely. Well, that is my fault, Miss Beaumont said, with colours flying in her cheeks. And I said so, and I don't see why you must blame other people for what I asked them to do.
He should have known better. I was there, Cassian said, at least on the recent occasion, so if you want to blame someone,
you should blame Eliza,
Louisa said briskly.
She has made it quite clear she was the motivating spirit in both these escapades, with Sev and Mr. Charnage merely her cat's paws.
Although honestly, Sev, how you should not have known better is beyond me.
Nevertheless, she has not made excuses for herself, so Leo needs to stop trying to make this anyone else's fault. No, we all see that's what you're doing, so shut up.
Yes, please stop, Mr. Cross,
Miss Beaumont said. I don't want to blame my mistakes on other people, and I don't want you to do that for me. It isn't fair. I am not a child who needs to be absolved of responsibility for a broken toy.
What I did was my fault, all of it, and if it makes you think badly of me, I'm very sorry for it. But it will not help anyone to pretend otherwise.
Leo opened his mouth, closed it, and finally said,
Miss Beaumont, I should rather have your faults than other people's perfection.
Oh, good God, Louisa muttered. He ignored her. I beg your pardon. And yours, Charnage, I possibly got a little carried away. Daisel nodded acknowledgement in a very serious manner. He didn't catch Cassian's eye.
Louisa rolled her eyes.
Marvellous. If you are harbouring a desire to play the knight for Eliza, what we actually need is a way to get her out of this tangle.
Both of them, Cassian said. Daisel has a reputation to salvage too. If Sir James Vere chooses to speak of the recent incident, it will do a great deal of damage to them both.
Possibly more than you're aware, Louisa said.
Kentridge has rather run up against the rocks of Eliza's trustee, who seems to be quite appallingly sluggish.
If or when Vere chooses to make this story public, suitably embroidered, it will be most unpleasant for Eliza, for any gentleman who might wish to marry her without being ridiculed as a fortune hunter with low standards, and for Mr. Charnage, if he does not care to be known as a dangerous abductor and abandoner.
I would rather not be.
Daisel was red in the face too now.
You should be aware that Vere has had a great deal to say about me in the past, and I dare say he will bring it all out again, which will not help matters.
I'm sorry about that.
It is not your fault,
Cassian said through his teeth.
He has slandered you continually because of your father's wrongdoing, and it has to stop.
It seems to me we have a number of people in this room for whom Vere is a problem,
Kentridge said.
Might I suggest everyone put their cards on the table?
Over dinner, Louisa added. Leo is both more pleasant and more intelligent when fed. And I dare say Cook is in a fury by now since we should have been eating 20 minutes ago and everything will be quite spoiled. Let us go in.
The dinner was not spoiled, but it might as well have been for all the attention anyone paid to the excellent meal. Kentridge presided, drawing out the problem with forensic care.
Miss Beaumont's situation, he said. Vere is legally her guardian. He could insist on her return to his home, at least attempt to compel her marriage, and certainly raise objections to any marriage attempted without his consent. We can resist that at law and hope to draw out a case until she attains her majority, but that is several months off. Moreover, any case will involve her attacking his character, which is not known to be bad, and him attacking hers, which has this matter of 2 elopements attached to it. Further, Miss Beaumont remains a very rich woman,
and a rich woman with a damaged reputation is liable to attract men of questionable motives, which would be distressing for her and cast an unflattering light on any decent man with aspirations to her hand.
A decent man would not care a button for her fortune or people's opinion, Leo said, chin up.
Miss Beaumont pressed her lips together to avoid wobble. But if the world believes a man is marrying a ruined woman for her money, people are so cruel. I would not want to do that to a man I cared for. Oh, I wish I hadn't eloped.
You aren't ruined yet, Louisa said firmly.
If this Mr. Marston keeps quiet and I say you came directly to me and only used Mr. Charnage's name to muddy your trail.
You could indeed say that, my dear, but not in court, Kentridge informed her. Your lightest wish is my command in general, but I must require you not to commit perjury, even in a good cause. Let us turn to Mr. Charnage's problem. Vere seems to dislike you rather, Mr. Charnage.
My father robbed him at gunpoint and killed his whist partner, Dazel said. I don't blame him for taking that poorly. He also manufactured a scandal about me at my cousin's home. He had hold of some profiles I had cut, it's a hobby, which were for a gentleman's party and claimed I was distributing them to the young people there.
That was a lie, Miss Beaumont said.
I heard it said, but I was there and I never saw any such thing, and Mrs. Swain did not ask me or anyone if it was true.
Anna Swain? Sellingstow's cousin?
No, she would not.
What a dreadful prig of a woman she is, and her husband is worse, Louisa said.
They are unquestionably the most righteous people I have ever met.
Appalling bores.
Mr. Charnage's cousins, my dear.
Sure, nobody could be related to the Swains and be happy about it.
Dazel made a face that suggested Louisa had the right of it.
All the same, Vere did have some rather unfortunate profiles, even if I had not meant them for that audience. And then I did attempt to elope with Miss Beaumont.
Kentridge tapped his fingers on the table.
It seems to me that Vere has a number of unfortunately accurate things to say. He can demand Miss Beaumont's return, accuse her of various misbehaviors, bring up Mr. Charnage's offences, justified or not, to stoke the flames of scandal, invoke Leo's debts, and quite probably drag Seven into it all. This entire business could become quite unpleasant for all of you, and it would make it very difficult indeed to argue that Miss Beaumont's wardship should be struck down, by marriage or otherwise.
Miss Beaumont had gone pale. Leo reached out to her, and she gripped his hand.
You must have some ideas, Kentridge, he insisted. The man is a villain.
One with the law on his side, and who will have public opinion on his side, too?
He had me kidnapped, Cassian said.
Admittedly, while trying to have Miss Beaumont kidnapped, but I don't see that's better.
You'd be the one ridiculed for that,
Louisa pointed out.
And his reason was your involvement in this second elopement, which is not information we want to set about.
He is a cheat, Leo said. We can surely use that.
It will be hard to prove,
Kentridge said.
Consider, Leo. The only way to demonstrate that he is a cheat would be for him and his partner to play a game under the eyes of neutral parties who had been made aware of his methods in advance, because otherwise they will not remember or notice what he says and plays. That means people who can be trusted not to give anything away, because all he need do not to be caught is not use it. Could you really tell people, enough people, about his system in all its subtleties and have them memorize it and watch him play and be sure they would not let anything slip, and that they would be prepared to assert what they heard and saw and, after all that, have other people believe their account? Perhaps it is achievable, but...
He made a face.
You're talking a great deal about public opinion, Cassian said.
Because that is what we need,
Louisa returned.
Eliza's future will be determined by public opinion. If she will be admitted to good society even as a married woman, for example.
Many ladies are who have done worse,
Leo muttered.
Better born ladies who already have friends in high places,
I never said it was fair, Louisa added. Yes, but am I not a friend in a high place? Cassian asked. Can I not direct opinion? Quite seriously, I am Seven. If I give Daisel and Miss Beaumont my countenance... Louisa rolled her eyes. Dear Sev, you are not, with the best will in the world, an arbiter of society. You've never tried to be. You would have to make a deal more of a splash than you currently do.
And it is not the be-all and end-all in any case, Kentridge said. We need to free Miss Beaumont legally, and Vere has the upper hand given what he can say about her, and indeed about Mr. Charnage.
He held up a hand as both Cassian and Leo spoke.
I realize you think that unjust, but it is not I who needs persuading of it.
No, Daisel said. As Cassian Seven said, it's public opinion. If public opinion could be turned against Vere, if he could be exposed as a cheat, that would surely make it easier to fix him in the public mind as a liar, and in the courts as an unfit guardian.
Absolutely, Kentridge said. It would be ideal. Unfortunately, as I just explained in some detail, I don't see a way to do it, which makes this tangent fruitless.
He paused, his eyes narrowing.
Unless you have something in mind, Mr. Charnage?
Daisel glanced at Cassian. I might. Chapter 18. The next period was as busy as Daisel had been in a while. Cassian's valet turned up. Waters, a very correct and elderly man about three times his master's age, was appalled to see the Duke looking so scruffy, more appalled to be informed that he would not be staying in the Star in Leamington with his master. I told him to take my things down to Wotton House, open it up and make all ready for the six of us, Cassian said. He came in the ducal coach, of course, so I told him to take it down and I would drive myself. He sighed. I feel rather unkind and distinctly ungrateful.
You should at least be grateful.
Cassian had been very thoroughly valeted before Water's departure, and was admiring himself in the mirror. He deserved to.
Fine clothes made the man, Daisel supposed.
But Cassian's were extraordinarily fine. Superb quality, superb cut, perfectly fitted. He might look like nobody in an old coat, but properly groomed and clad to Daisel's eyes, he was every inch the Duke. Maybe that wasn't entirely Daisel's eyes. Cassian seemed a deal more natural in his ducal identity than Daisel might have expected, and a deal less unassuming while occupying it. Judging by the frequent raised eyebrows, looks of surprise, and occasional heated exchange with his cousins, this was new. Cassian had said he needed to be Cassian in order to be the Duke. Maybe this was what he'd meant. He moved behind his quiet nobleman, stroking the flanks of his coat. This is marvelous. Why are you being unkind to your valet? Because Waters wants nothing more than to go home to Staplow. He's too old to be jaunting about the country, but I would break his heart if I simply told him so. He will do better if he reaches that conclusion himself. I will move him into some sort of sinecure position where he can retire in all but name and keep his dignity. I owe him that. I owe him a great deal. But I also need a new valet.
Is that urgent?
Yes, Cassian said, turning and slipping his arms around Daisel's waist. Crucial. We'll have enough people to hide from. We need an ally in the house. Someone whose duties involve letting me wake up with you and ensuring nobody else sees.
That sounds good, if it's possible, Daisel said slowly. Do you have such a paragon in mind?
I had an idea. I wondered what you'd think.
Though I don't know if paragon is the word I'd choose. Martin, are you serious?
I'm seriously asking, Cassian said. After all, he knows about us, which is a start, and you said he was ambitious. I am not a leader of fashion, of course, but then he's unlikely to get another post at all. So he might settle for a duke, I see what you're saying, but Cass, he robbed you. Yes, but I understand why. We had a frank conversation while you were sleeping. He was treated shockingly. I grant he has behaved very badly himself, but Well, if I wanted you to forgive me and I want people to overlook anything you may have done, surely I should extend grace to others in my turn. He gave a slanted smile. I'm even called His Grace. That seems to suggest an obligation. I doubt it's one felt by many dukes. You realize he is a wanted man for a theft that took place in Northumberland as Martin Nichols. I see no reason he shouldn't be John Martin in London and Staplow, in my service, and have a new start. I can offer him that if he wants it. His lovely lips curved. I do owe him something for bringing me to you. Dazel looked at him, so earnest, so determined to get it right, and wondered how happiness could make your heart hurt. If you're willing to harbour a felon, I'd rather you didn't put it quite like that. It's wonderful, and I do think it could work. You, don't mind prior relations and all that? Not if you don't. He may, of course, in which case he can decline. But a valet on our side would make life a deal easier, and once I don't have to consider waters, I can move around a great deal more. Dazel raised a brow. Going somewhere? I'd like to travel. Not on the stage, he added firmly, as though Dazel was likely to argue. Birmingham was fascinating, and I want to spend more time on my own lands without stewards all over me. I think I need to see things directly, without people mediating my view for me. I do realize you've been wandering a long time, and I don't want to drag you around. You can drag me around. Not to Staplow, Cassian said with deep feeling. Not yet. My aunt's days, you have no idea. I don't want to dislodge them, but I have one or two other properties that might become more of a home. One or two? Or so, Cassian said with a look of ridiculous embarrassment. And if things go well in London and you like Wotton House, I thought we could spend quite a lot of time there. Dazel pulled him closer, hanging on, and rubbed his face in Cassian's hair. You are marvellous, he said, a little muffled. And I want this to go well, more than I can say, but what if it doesn't? All Vere has to do is not cheat, and then we're stuck. Cassian caught his hand. Then I will pack Leo and Eliza off to Gretna in my own coach. I think things are going that way, don't you? And face down anyone who bothers them or you. You'd hate that. Leo said his father would have a stroke. Leo had entirely forgotten his objections to Dazel once he'd come up with a scheme to help Eliza and Scotch Vere. They were all on first-name terms now, except for Kentridge, who Dazel suspected didn't have a first name. Cassian had offered his new name to his cousins, who both said it sounded very well, but they were used to Sev. He didn't seem to mind. To be Cassian for Dazel was all he needed, he said, and Dazel had no objection to having Cassian all to himself. Uncle Hugo wouldn't be pleased, Cassian agreed. He fought at least one duel in his youth and sowed plenty of wild oats. So why he is quite so insistent I ought to be respectable, I can't say. It sounds exactly right for your family, Dazel pointed out. The terribly respectable veneer cracks at the slightest opportunity. Look at Louisa suggesting we kidnap Vere. Thank the Lord Kentridge stepped in. That may be true, actually, Cassian admitted. But Uncle Hugo would hate more than anything to see Leo accused of mercenary motives if he and Eliza make a match of it. He worked so hard not to be accused of that himself with my fortune. And if he gets it into his head that Leo is taking another man's leavings for money, it will go horribly. Whereas if we can present Eliza to him as a wronged woman who took her fate in her own hands, he will defend her to his last breath. The story of the woman who escaped from a villainous guardian and the gentleman who assisted her without thought of reward or reputation, Dazel agreed. For which we need to pull this off. And in turn, that means you need to sharpen your skills. Cassian groaned. I have already played 3 hours of whist today. And we have another 2 hours to go, Dazel said implacably, or as implacably as he could, which wasn't very, since he didn't want to force the issue. Cassian loathed card games, with their competition and shouting, and his mind visibly drifted. If it's any consolation, I don't like it either. Cassian stepped back to look at him. I had wanted to ask, is it difficult doing this?
Dazzle had not played for years because the sight of cards made him see again the empty room. Cards scattered over table and floor. The 10 of spades sodden to pulp with a dying man's blood. Cassian wouldn't touch a card again if he blurted all that out.
It's tainted, yes. But the truth is I can't see the pleasure in gaming anymore. It's nothing but patterns on pasteboard and a night's meaningless manufactured excitement. And for that I lost my schooling and my father lost everything else. We'd have been ruined even if he hadn't killed Haddon. Frankly, it all seemed